Hey guys, this is Joe. Today I want to introduce you to our partner Vanta. Achieving ISO 27001 or SOC 2 compliance can unlock major growth for your company and build customer trust, but the process can be time intense and costly. Vanta automates compliance, getting you audit ready quickly and saving up to 85% of associated costs. And Vanta scales with your business, helping you enter new markets. Join 7,000 global companies like Atlassian, Flow Health, and Quora that trust Vanta. Claim 20% off Vanta at vanta.com/startupradio. That's vanta.com, spelled vanta.com/startupradio.
Welcome to startuprad.io, your podcast and YouTube blog covering the German startup scene with news, interviews, and live events.
Hello and welcome everybody. This is Joe from startuprad.io, your startup podcast, YouTube blog, and internet radio station from Germany, Austria, and Switzerland in English. Today, I do have another guest here with me, Jenny, the winner of the Female Entrepreneur 2023 for the German Startup Awards, co-CEO and co-founder of Leapsome. Hey, Jenny, how you doing?
I'm really happy to be here with you today.
Totally my pleasure. We may say that this interview is supported by startupraven.com. A startup journey can be a tough one, but it doesn't have to feel like you're alone on your quest. Invest in other success with us, joining our community of entrepreneurs who are building amazing things every day, no matter how big or small their ideas may seem at first glance. Best way to register early is startupraven.com. And we may also say that this interview is in cooperation with the German Startup Association, Bundesverband Deutscher Startups, and the German Startup Awards. They honor each year outstanding female and male entrepreneurs and investors in special categories. You can learn more in the link down here in the show notes. And of course, there is a playlist for our interviews from 2021 and 2022. That is now all out of the way. We talk about the person first. When I'm looking at your background, I was wondering, are you currently in NYC?
Yes, I am. I'm sitting here. I'm actually working from home today out of Brooklyn. Our office is over in Manhattan, but I had some early meetings, so didn't make the commute today. So you see a tiny bit of my place if you're on the YouTube channel.
It reminded me a little bit of Brownstone, what you're showing there in the back. So that was my first hint. But before we get to your US expansion, US location, I've been looking at your LinkedIn profile, which is linked down here in the show notes. You've gotten quite around. You've been in St. Gallen, in Lund, in Geneva, and in Oxford. What drove you to study at all those universities?
That's a good question. Even going back to school, I think the most influential teacher I've had in school was my politics teacher. And I think he ultimately sparked a lot of interest in me in tackling some of the big global challenges. And when I finished high school, I ultimately wanted to become a diplomat. So I ended up going to St. Gallen because they had an international relations study that seemed to be like a really cool way to move into that direction. However, St. Gallen is a very business-heavy school. So in the end, I actually ended up studying politics or international relations and economics, like a dual degree, with also a lot of exposure to business studies. And Geneva and Lund were just semesters abroad. Always liked to explore new things, try new things, and had the opportunity to do that twice, which was a lot of fun. And then I actually took a year in between my undergrad and my postgrad, and actually did an internship both with the UN as well as the diplomatic service, and figured out, like, I really do want to work on these big global challenges. However, I do need, like, I'm very impatient. I needed another way to have impact faster. And the third internship I actually did at the time was a carbon origination and trading company. So under the Kyoto Protocol, there was a way to basically build projects that reduced CO2 in certain countries, often with a development impact, and then actually sell those carbon credits to ultimately finance these projects. And I thought it was so cool because it was very impactful, but it was a very entrepreneurial organization, and that got me hooked to having impact through a business and an entrepreneurial path. And my studies in Oxford were actually very much focused on environmental change and management. So as the continuation of that from a studying perspective.
And now you have to take the leap together with us, because then you ended up in a sales role. How on earth did that happen?
Very clear progression. So I...
I'm curious how this clear progression comes along.
So after Oxford, I ended up starting to work for a clean tech or green tech startup. Again, like really cool impact-driven cause. We were working on building pretty much the missing piece to get to 100% renewable energy future by building battery storage and smart controls and algorithms, getting them onto a grid, and ultimately thereby being able to stabilize the grid in every sort of like shorter moment, which is something that's historically done by rotating masses of power plants. So it's very impactful. It was a very impactful technology, very cool startup and founders. And I joined the company in a fairly undefined role, and then actually ended up sliding into like a initially business development, but then increasingly sales role. So I never planned my career in sales. And I think a lot of people actually coincidentally end up in a sales role, but I really loved it. Like, it was very entrepreneurial early stage sales, but I learned so much doing that on the job. And yeah, I think it's been a really, really great foundation as a founder that you actually have had exposure to sales in the past.
Let's see if there's really a linear progression here for the very simple reason, because the next thing you have been doing is then ending up in a newspaper here in Germany, Zeit, also known as the number one place where you would advertise if there's a chair open to become a professor at a university or stuff like that.
Yes, that's one business area they're very strong at. So I got the opportunity to work as Chief of Staff, Referent der Geschäftsführung for the CEO of Zeit Verlag. And again, like the sort of like continuation was, it's a very impact-oriented business in the sense that I believe quality media, and I would say the Zeit, like their flagship product, is probably still by far the best publication within Germany. And I believe that quality newspapers or quality journalism, I mean, it doesn't matter what form, is the fourth pillar of democracy. So again, very impactful cause. And I got the opportunity to be exposed and work on a lot of transformation and change projects. And I thought it was actually a really interesting challenge after being in the startup world to see how more established business actually works and what some of the challenges actually are there. And there's actually, I can talk about that in a second, some similarities between the startup and the Zeit Verlag, challenges that I saw that actually led to why Liebsum exists. And so it was again, like really strong impact orientation. It's still relatively sort of like entrepreneurial organization in certain ways. An opportunity to have impact, to learn fast and work with really, really great people.
And then as you already said, 2016, you co-founded Liebsum. Actually, that is quite some time. That are now 7 years. Did you think at the time you would still be around, let's say, 5 or 7 years after founding the company?
I mean, I would say every founder has a big vision. And I mean, we had a really big drive to succeed. I don't think you start a company necessarily if you don't believe you can make it. So we very much had this drive and this vision ahead of us. And obviously there also is always the risk of failing. I mean, I think we got pretty far.
I think so as well. And 5 years after founding the startup, you made the first investment. Everybody would think, yeah, a few million here and there. But actually, you then raised just from nowhere Series A of $60 million. Can you take us a little bit along the journey when you started out until this funding and what Leapsum actually does?
So, I mean, ultimately, Kajetan Amansberg and I founded Leapsum because of the challenges we'd seen in previous organizations. And I mean, going back to sort of these previous experiences I mentioned, I think in order to succeed, a company needs to be really, really strongly aligned, whether it's a phase of growth or a phase of transformation. And what do we mean by alignment? Like, it's how do you march to the same tune? Like, does everybody know where we're heading as the company, what my department, my individual role is, and ultimately getting there? So we'd seen like a fuzziness in that alignment in previous organizations we worked for, and that was one of the things we wanted to tackle. In addition to that, if you want to be successful as an organization, you don't just need an aligned workforce, but you also ultimately need an organization and an environment in which people can succeed. And this was also something where we saw like how hard it is to scale that, how hard it is to also keep evolving the organization the way you need it when you're under the pressure to transform. So we really also wanted to help company to really build and iterate and continue to build really exceptional organizations based on data. Like, what do people need to be successful in these organizations? What that means from a product perspective, I can talk about in a second. In addition to that, the third challenge we've seen in these previous organizations we worked for is where we, as individuals, as managers, really supported to grow and develop alongside the challenges we had ahead of us. And that's sort of like people enablement in the core. Like, do people know their strengths? Do people know where they stand? What's expected of them? Where they need to sort of like grow, develop? That's also something that often really didn't work in the organizations we worked for. So we ultimately, with Leapsum, we've built the tool that Kajetan and I were missing in these previous organizations we've worked for. And we started the company out of Kajetan's kitchen in end of 2016 and started to like really start with that question of what makes people successful in organizations and thought about different processes, just the different starting points. And I think back in the time, we always would have had the assumption that we might be raising in a year or two when we have the first product, first traction. But what ultimately happened is we were so successful with the product we'd launched that we were able to actually grow out of cash flow very fast and very effectively. So when we actually then finally decided to raise, and I can talk about why we did that, we were benchmarked against a lot of other startups of how long it took us, for example, to get from 1 to 10 million ARR. And despite not having VC funding, we actually were in the top tier of companies when it came to the speed of our growth. Just by having been able to hit a pain and build a product that serves this pain very, very effectively. So we didn't necessarily, we didn't bootstrap, so growing out of our cash flow from a dogmatic standpoint, but we were able to do that in a very effective way. And then early 2022, we basically asked ourselves, like, what do we need to unlock the next stage of growth? Like, how do we get to 100 million ARR? Like, what are the things that need to change? What do we need to invest in? And we basically decided, like, we really want to double down our international expansion. We want to double down and moving more upmarket. We already had really exciting customers in the sort of like bigger segments, like a Spotify, for example. That was an early customer. And so in order to double down on some of these additional growth hypotheses, expansion, moving upmarket, we decided it would now actually be helpful to have additional cash to invest upfront. And that's basically the point in time when we decided to bring in external funding. And we did a very lean round, quite successfully, brought inside partners on board. They're incredible software investor, actually also helpful beyond the money. We have great partners, very, very happy to have them. Also, Creandum and Visionaries are great funds, also incredible, smart people. And yeah, that's been a bit of the story there. And I haven't talked about the product, but I can do that at a later stage.
Yes. I would give you a lead into the product, because you said with the co-founder, you had a few assumptions what makes companies successful. Can you walk us through those assumptions and how you structure, how you build a product out of that?
Yeah. I mean, it's basically the, I've implicitly mentioned them, those already. So the first one for me is alignment. Like, is there clarity of where we're going, what every department, every team is expected? Like, people need clarity what's expected of them and how their work fits into the bigger picture in order to succeed in organizations. And some of the ways we support that is breaking strategy down into goals, into OKRs, but also staying aligned all the way to the daily doing through really effective meeting management. And that's, I think you said we're an HR platform or something along those lines. And we would actually, I think we're often considered HR tech, but ultimately we actually consider ourselves something technically beyond, because that really goes into how do we enable managers to do their role well? How do we enable the C-level to ultimately execute on their strategy? And that's the first dimension. That's the alignment piece. The second piece is, how do we build organizations in which people can succeed? And in order to do that, we need to first measure what works and what doesn't work. And one way we empower that is actually doing that with engagement surveys, pulse surveys, pretty much measuring the pulse of the organization, listening to your employees that often do know what works and what doesn't work, but not stopping there. Like, so basically we aggregate that data in real time, but we help you to segment that data, where certain challenges in the organization, where things improving, deteriorating, but even going a step further and making that data actionable, in order to suggest, like, what's your next smartest step in order to actually improve your organization and be that environment and build that environment in which people can be successful. And then the third dimension, and I would actually even divide that into two, is people enablement and manager enablement. So people enablement going into that, maybe an element of that is performance management, really starts with generating clarity of what's expected of people. Like, you can't measure performance when people don't even know what's expected of them. So generating that clarity, what is expected of you in your role, Joe, and then also working, basically providing clarity, what's expected maybe in the next role, what are competencies, what are career ladders, and making sure there's instant feedback, continuous feedback, but also we take a step back in a certain point in time to review where you at, what worked, have you delivered on these expectations, but also what are your next steps, and then supporting the individual also with the pushing through on development objectives, pushing through on learning, and that's basically what we do along the entire employee journey. Like, you get support being onboarded, you have first feedback interactions maybe 3 months after being onboarded continuously as part of your one-on-one check-ins, but then maybe biannual 360 to have an even more holistic view on where you're at and where you can go next. And then from a manager perspective, it's somewhat similar, but it's really something we aren't optimized for the HR persona. Obviously, we serve the HR persona because they set up a lot of these processes, but we've truly always optimized to be or set up to optimize for the end user, so the individual, but also the manager. Manager have really hard jobs. There's a lot that's expected of them. So helping them to really understand how they're leading their team, what are the strengths and the people of their of the people on their team, what are people struggling with, and really helping them through the combination of that alignment data, managing their meetings, having understanding of the competencies and the development tracks of their team. Knowing what works and what doesn't work on the team through the survey data, we really help managers to actually make their jobs easier. And actually, a really cool continuation of that is we've also been integrating a lot of AI features. And so in multiple parts of the platform, so we help you to draft good OKRs with AI. Like, if you don't know how to put it right, like, put a couple of prompts and we help you to actually get those right. When people write reviews, for example, like, a lot of people, for a lot of people, it's much easier to edit rather than to start on a blank sheet of paper. So we help you. You put a couple of prompts into like the review you write. You see the contextual information of the feedback you've previously shared, the goals of that person, and we actually help you to then draft like really effective feedback to then prepare really effective feedback conversations with that little AI augmentation to make your job as a manager easier. And also in a similar way, like, for example, we have some organizations like a Spotify and Northvolt, parts of like Mercedes-Benz or Volkswagen, very big organizations in North America, in different parts of Europe, where you have surveys that run with, I don't know, 5,000, 10,000 employees. And right, like, we also help you to not just understand the quantitative data, but we also now aggregate the qualitative data with AI. So you have an instantaneous understanding of what are the comments, what is the sentiments across certain themes to really make that really rich qualitative data of the comments of people instantaneously actionable and helpful. And I think this is where all of the advances we've seen in generative AI unlock like a huge new level of really in augmenting the HR professionals, the HR business partners, the managers to truly do their jobs more effectively.
When you've been talking about that, I saw a lot of buzzwords and went through my own experience as a consultant as well as an employee. And you've been talking about the alignment with strategy. There are barely any companies out there where you can tell they do have a strategy. A lot of people mistake an Excel sheet as a strategy, but that is just the result of a strategy.
Yeah.
And personal experience, I've seen many organizations where they have like instant surveys, Yammer was around and stuff like that. But it appears that they just eliminate the negative feedback. They just ignore the negative feedback. Yeah, there are some negative pieces here. We just ignore them and everything is hanyo. Everything is wonderful, and we do those surveys on a regular basis, says the manager. And he just doesn't say, well, you know, there's a lot of negative feedback. They just say, oh, that's an extreme. We just eliminate this one and that one and this one, and then you get a good result. So, I see the usefulness of the tool, but you have to apply it really. People enablement and manager enablement. I'm really traumatized by that one because in the past, especially as a consultant, you get mostly measured by KPIs that you yourself probably cannot influence. Most depends on if you're on project, and if you're on project depends on what projects a company gets. That also depends on the partners and the directors and how they want to staff it. So that's the, I would say 80, 90, 95% of your performance, and you can totally not influence it. So there are definitely companies where this really can work, but there is a big, big lot of potential to really just make a bad company continue in their ways. Do you have some experience how companies are actually used to really improve, to get over this? Because especially in Germany, I have seen that people are just introducing new tools, but they don't change the way they do stuff. They don't change the mindset. They don't change anything. It's just a new tool and they do the same stuff with it.
No, I agree. And I think that's part of the challenge of the topic. And it's also like a huge driver behind our growth, right? A lot of people have been burned by terrible performance management, terrible talent management. And I think there's a lot of, there have been, and there still unfortunately are, a lot of really, really poor practices and processes out there. And I mean, ultimately, that's the reason like Leapsome isn't just the software for people enablement, OKRs, modern performance management, employee engagement. We actually aren't like an empty software, but we have a stance. So we actually have a perspective on how these things are done in an effective and in a pretty much right way. And just to make it very tangible, like, for example, what you've mentioned. So I think a lot of sort of the bad traditional performance management has been mainly backward looking, right? So you only said like, still, like, you haven't met your target for billable hours, for example. So purely backward looking, not looking at the underlying causes, like not putting that into any perspective. Whereas modern performance management we see is often like, there's obviously, we need to talk about sort of like how did, I mean, first of all, it starts with clarifying the expectations. So what do I expect of you to be successful in your role? Is billable hours one element of that? But maybe what are the leading behaviors that ultimately lead to that happening? Like, do you have good time management? I mean, that's a very basic one. Are you spending enough time maybe prospecting new projects, for example? Like, just a lot of clarity on what's expected of you. And then in addition to that, it's also much more forward-looking and competency-oriented, right? What are the underlying behaviors for you to be successful in your role, for you to grow into the next role, right? Maybe in this stage, it's actually supporting, if you're a consultant, it's maybe supporting proposals, being effective in identifying pains of future clients, making strong sales pitches, whereas maybe the next step on the career ladder you're working towards is like actually leading the sales process with potential future consulting clients. So just generating that clarity, not just on or having the conversation what worked well in the last period, but being very clear on what the underlying competencies and behaviors are and what you need to develop to potentially, if you want to grow into the next role. And that's one, I would say, key characteristic where the old and the new systems differ.
Made this experience because they have expectations defined so wide you could drive a Boeing through. And then you have trainings that should enable you to get competencies, but actually it's just skills on the job that you need. And you don't have like a real development program in many companies. That is something you're working on.
Exactly. So maybe just to finish quickly the performance piece. So I think in addition to that, rather than just getting like reviewed by your manager, often I think modern processes take different perspectives into account. So while your manager might see you in certain situations, maybe also generate or like including a certain level of peer feedback, ensuring you also have an opportunity to truly share like your perspective, your self-assessment. I think those are different building blocks, and I could go to further ones that differentiate the old bad from the more modern people-centric process that ultimately really help lead to better performance. And to your point, like if we look at this from an employee process, let's say we have Mike. Mike is a consultant. And Mike started a new job, and on Leapsum, like he's getting support with his onboarding. So first of all, he's getting certain trainings to be accustomed to the key processes, the key things he needs to learn. Some of that might be digital, some of that might be certain mentorship sessions or trainings with other folks from within the company. So he's first of all getting all the support he needs to understand like what he needs to be successful in his role. Then after, we might support Mike and his manager to have like a weekly one-on-one check-in with a really clearly defined agenda. Like I personally always like to start with like a check-in. How are you doing? Clarity of like, what do you need support from me on? Direction, coaching. What are just updates for me? What are some of the bottlenecks you need support on? So I'm starting to have these conversations between the manager and Mike on an ongoing basis. Then maybe after 3 months, he has his first probation check-in or 3 months check-in. And there we review, like, do you have everything you need to be successful in your role? Do you have clarity of what's expected to him? Let's review how you're making progress on the things that are expected of you. Let's rate you or like give you feedback on the competencies you need to be successful in your role. And then we have a joint conversation around that, potentially also incorporating peer feedback to have a good understanding where Mike is. Mike has a good understanding where he is. And then we nudge you to define, for example, like a development objective. So Mike knows, while I'm strong on this part, and it's very important for people to know their strengths to build on, maybe there's other areas he needs to compensate on. And maybe we set two development objectives, one that's strengths-oriented. So Mike can focus like to really double down on his strengths, because that's going to be his superpower in our team. And I, as a manager, now have that clarity, like Mike is the superstar when it comes to Excel modeling. So I'm going to later, when I think about attributing work or initiatives in the team to really build upon that understanding. But maybe there's like, Mike is really bad at project management and he does need to work on that a tiny bit to be successful in that consultant role. Then we jointly define these development objective and Leapsome pushes them into your one-on-ones again. So you have these regular conversations, maybe on a monthly basis again, to make sure we don't just set them and they're in some system that nobody checks in and everybody forgets about them, that become actional. They actually really help you to to continuously work on and with them. And then we can review it again, maybe in 3 or 6 months. And when we have another like more holistic step back touch point. And that's exactly the kind of system that helps Mike and his manager to be aligned and for Mike to truly succeed in this role.
That would be really cool if performance management at one point really works like that. Everybody would like to learn more. We link your company website down here in the show notes. We're already talking a little bit longer than usual for the simple reason that's an important topic for a lot of people. We know especially a lot of entrepreneurs are listening and they just built a little bit of model how this could work together here. We usually end with two final questions. One of them, are you currently looking to hire people?
Yes, we are. We're always hiring. And I think maybe we can link our careers page in the show notes so that people have the best up-to-date view and all the exciting positions we're hiring for in Berlin and New York.
We actually have a lot of new listeners. I think we may pass 200,000 listeners in our podcast this month. So what we usually do, we have one blog post on Medium. Go down here in the show notes. There you find the Medium blog post and there you find all the relevant links. For the very simple reason, it's a nightmare to change a link or comment once it's out there. And that's why we are linking to the Medium blog. And secondly, you raised a Series A round back in 2022. Would you be willing to talk to new investors?
I mean, we're pretty laser focused on execution, so we're not actively fundraising. But as I do know, the investor community folks do generally always reach out no matter what. I think we just always need to be very intentional given how many things are going on and we can't do everything at the same time, how much time we can allocate to certain things.
Mm-hmm. Great. So bottom line, if they are interested, they should reach out. We link your LinkedIn profile down here in the show notes. And if they're helpful, they may even get some feedback from you guys. Congratulations again on winning German Startup Award Female Entrepreneur of the Year 2023.
And maybe, Joe, if I may actually mention one more thing, we actually have Leapsome for Startups program where we have really attractive discounts for earlier stage companies because we know, I think, part of what made us successful as Leapsome, how we got this far is because we've been eating our own dog food. Like we've been really, truly working on that alignment, that building a great organization and people enablement piece. And we want to give back to that early stage startup community. So we have the Leapsome for Startup programs. Maybe we can also send over that link. It was a lot of fun to talk
as
to you.
Down here.
Awesome. And congratulations to you for this amazing reach and listenership, if that's the right word.
Yeah, totally fine. Thank you very much. Totally my pleasure.
Awesome. Thanks, Joe.
Have a good day. Bye-bye.
That's all, folks. Find more news, streams, events, and interviews at www.startuprad.io. Remember, sharing is caring.